Is Belgium about to become the EU's first Marxist-ruled country? I was looking at this poll chart for Belgium from Politico the other day, and I noticed something odd. PTB, the Workers' Party of Belgium, has doubled their results since the last election, jumping from 12%, which granted them a mere 6th place in the election, to 24%, which ties them for first place within the margin of error. That's within Brussels, the capital of the country. In Antwerp, they are already at 20% too. In Wallonia, they've risen to 18%, and even in Flanders, they just passed the double-digit mark. Now, granted, Belgium is a very fractured country politically. There's four parties polling between 20 to 25%, and four others tied at 10%. But still, this is a huge climb. And if we go back to 2016, PTB was only polling at 6%. It had a meteoric rise over the past decade. And it's fascinating to me that a Marxist socialist party has been able to do this. Furthermore, PTB, or PVDA as it's known in Flemish, is the only party that is represented fully as a national one, representing Brussels, Flanders, and Wallonia. Many or all of its competitors have split into regional parties of either side. So could this be the tipping point for Belgium to become a Marxist country? What would happen if they reached power in an upcoming election? And how did they get this far already? Let's find out. The political landscape of Europe has seen a fair share of surprises over the last few decades, even inside Belgium itself, with its current prime minister coming from a Flemish party that defends reunification with the Netherlands. But outside Belgium, few stories are as fascinating as the rise of the Workers' Party, known as the PTB in French and PVDA in Flemish. This party has accomplished something that many political scientists thought was impossible in modern Western Europe, taking a marginal, kind of hardline, Marxist-Leninist organization and turning it into a major, mainstream political force. It seems to have been the exact opposite throughout most of Europe since the collapse of the USSR and the end of the Cold War. Many traditional left-wing parties across Europe have shrunk, or they compromise their values to stay in power, leaning more to the center. But the PTB has done the opposite. It stuck to its arguably more radical roots, repackaged the message for the modern era, and started winning over voters by the hundreds of thousands. Understanding how a Marxist party managed to achieve this in the heart of Europe requires looking back at where they came from and what they actually stand for today. To understand the PTB in modern times, you first have to go back to the 60s. Their roots lie in the big student protest movements of 1968, specifically at the Catholic University of Leuven. At the time, and even up to today, Belgium was deeply divided over language and culture, and the university itself was at the time splitting between its Dutch and French-speaking sections. Amid the chaos, a group of highly ideological students, led by a charismatic figure named Ludo Martens, grew disillusioned with traditional politics. They viewed the existing Belgian Marxist Party, or Communist Party, as too soft, bureaucratic, and worst of all, friendly and aligned with the Soviet Union, which they believed had abandoned true revolutionary ideals, and potentially didn't have Europe's best interests at heart. Influenced by the Cultural Revolution in China, these students first embraced Maoism. They founded a movement called AMADA, which stood for Alle Macht an die Arbeiters, meaning all power to the workers. What made these students different from typical university intellectuals was their commitment to kind of get their hands dirty. To truly understand the working class, these educated young people left their studies behind. They took jobs as factory and dock workers, miners in the heart of Belgium's industrial sector, in places such as Antwerp and Liège. They wanted to build a party from the factory floor up. In 79, AMADA officially transformed into a structured political party, taking the name of the Workers' Party of Belgium. For nearly three decades, the PTB remained on very much the fringes of Belgian politics. Despite their militant work in the trade unions, they were kind of seen as a dogmatic, sectarian party, they won only a fraction of percentages in elections, and to the average Belgian voter, they were effectively invisible. So by the mid-2000s, the party realized that if it didn't change its approach, it was going to disappear. The old guard was aging, and that dogmatic language of the 20th century was failing to connect with a changing workforce. In 2008, they held a historic party congress that changed everything. They decided to stop talking like an ancient revolutionary textbook and just start talking like regular people. They didn't abandon their core Marxist beliefs, but they fundamentally shifted towards solving the real problems that people had on a day-to-day basis to the reality of the working class. The party opened up. It restored some lost relations with unions and other progressive organizations. It became a modern Marxist party. According to them, a party for everyone that wanted to change the world, for the working class people, for the people first, not for profit. They also heavily embraced social media, building a digital operation that would eventually surpass almost every other political party in Belgium. Crucially, they built a massive network of community solidarity that gave them real-world credibility long before they started winning or getting good results in elections. Their most famous initiative is Médecins pour le Peuple, Medicine for the People, a network of clinics where doctors, nurses, and other specialists provide completely free healthcare to people in working-class neighborhoods. The doctors who work there accept the same flat salary as any other PTB staff member. This project showed voters that the party wasn't just making empty promises on a stage. They were actively treating and supporting marginalized communities without asking for anything back, and even before they got into power. Today, the PTB describes itself as a modern Marxist party. They don't hide their anti-capitalist stance, but they frame it around fairness and solidarity rather than a Soviet-style state control. Their platform is built on a few important and highly popular proposals designed to contrast sharply with standard European austerity. So what are those proposals exactly? Well, first is their economic policy. The PTB very strongly advocates for a millionaire tax, a wealth tax that would target the top 1% of fortunes in Belgium and use that money to fund public services. They also actively campaign for lowering the retirement age back to 65 years, increasing the minimum wage, and capping the prices of essential goods like electricity and food. They're also big defenders of Belgium's unique wage indexation system. This is something that already exists and it automatically raises salaries to keep up with inflation, but it's a policy that a lot of business groups want to remove. On the European stage, the PTB is pretty Eurosceptic, but from a distinct left-wing perspective. They don't want to leave the EU, but they view the European Union as a machine built by and for multinational corporations. They argue that EU treaties legally enforce neoliberal policies. They mandate the privatization of public services like railways and mail, and prohibit countries from properly regulating markets to protect their people. What makes the PTB even more unique in Belgium's incredibly complicated political system is something that I mentioned earlier. They're one of the few, for some people, the only relevant national party that is left. Belgium is strictly split into Dutch-speaking Flanders in the north and French-speaking Wallonia in the south. Every other major political family, the socialists, the liberals, the greens, the Christian Democrats, have completely split into separate, sometimes independent, Flemish and Francophone parties that sometimes barely speak to one another. The PTB remains a single unified organization. They just have one name in Dutch and one name in French. They have one leadership team, one strategy, and they explicitly reject the linguistic nationalism that often defines Belgian politics. They preach working class unity across both sides of that language border. Now, for a long time, the PTB's efforts didn't translate into big electoral gains. They won their first two federal parliamentary seats in 2014, but the real explosion happened after 2017, leading into the historic 2019 triple election, when people voted for federal, regional, and European seats. And this has continued into 2024. In 2019, they went from a minor political nuisance to what was effectively a political earthquake. They surged from 2 seats in the federal parliament to 12, capturing nearly 14% of the vote in Wallonia and making big breakthroughs in the capital of Brussels. By the time the 2024 elections came around, they solidified their positions even further, growing their presence to become an unavoidable power in the parliament. So, why did they grow so fast during this specific window? The answer lies in a perfect storm of economic anxiety and mainstream political failure. The late 2010s and the early 2020s were difficult for regular people. They still are. Between the financial fallout of the pandemic and the severe energy crisis that was triggered by geopolitical instability, the cost of living has skyrocketed. And while traditional ruling parties in Belgium kept talking about complicated budgetary deficits and corporate competitiveness, the PTB ran aggressive and highly effective campaigns showing how energy conglomerates, for instance, were making billions in profit while ordinary families couldn't afford to turn on their heaters. They also took advantage of disillusionment with the traditional left. Historically, Wallonia and Brussels were strongholds for the traditional Socialist Party of Belgium. However, decades of that party participating in governing coalitions had left working class voters kind of frustrated. To stay in government, they often repeatedly agreed to compromises, budget cuts, and pension reforms. The PTB successively framed the traditional center-left as a group of career politicians who had kind of sold out their base. When voters looked for an alternative to vent their anger, the PTB was there. They were clean of any scandals, untainted by unpopular government decisions. Granted, this is because they were never in government yet, but still. Above all, they bet on being just one of the people. The PTB requires all of its elected officials, from local city councillors to federal MPs, to live on an average worker's salary, usually around 2,500 euros a month, and they have to donate the rest of their government paychecks back to the party. This policy works as a great piece of political marketing. It allows PTB politicians to look a working class voter in the eye and prove they're not in it for the money. This created a deep sense of authenticity that traditional parties just don't replicate. So, if their popularity and support continues to grow, do they have a chance at winning the next election? Well, like everything in Belgium, especially politics, it's complicated. In Belgium, no single party ever wins a majority. The country is so politically fragmented that governments are always big coalitions of 4, 5, once even 7 different parties jammed together. So, winning for the PTB doesn't mean getting 51% of the vote. It means becoming so large in Wallonia and Brussels that it's mathematically impossible to form a left-of-center government without them. In recent polls, they have consistently fought for the number 1 or number 2 spot, at least in the French-speaking parts of the country. Despite their massive voter support, their chances of actually entering a federal government remain pretty complicated. The traditional center-right and liberal parties have made it clear that they view the PTB policies as dangerous and unworkable, and PTB doesn't want to work with them either. But other than that, they're still highly selective about entering power too. They've repeatedly stated that they won't join a government just to get cabinet seats if that means compromising on their core demands, like lowering the retirement age or implementing that wealth tax. They watched traditional Marxist parties in France and Italy join coalitions in the past, get watered down, and then punished by voters. But they are key parts of local majorities in a couple of municipalities, like Sint-Jans-Molenbeek or Vorst, with the Greens and the Social Democrats. These aren't small towns either. They have 160,000 inhabitants, respectively. Nationally, though, it seems PTB would rather stay powerful in the opposition, pulling the entire political conversation to the left, than enter a government where they have to enforce policies they hate. However, at the regional level in Wallonia or Brussels or other major cities, like I mentioned, the pressure to form a left-wing alliance with the traditional socialists is big, and that's where their most realistic shot at executive power lies. In a hypothetical scenario of them reaching power, the country would likely change a lot. They would implement that wealth tax. They would change the tax system, cutting taxes for lower and middle income workers. They would probably nationalize a lot of key sectors. They would invest in public works. And for the average citizen, if their proposals were followed and worked out properly, this would probably mean a massive redistribution of wealth from the top down. There would be a significant strengthening of the social safety net and a big government check on corporate power. But it could have some negative consequences too. For instance, a PTB-led Belgium wouldn't fare well as the only Marxist-led government within the EU. They would probably defy European fiscal rules, they would fight for European treaties to be rewritten, and this would lead to a massive political showdown. The EU has mechanisms to penalize countries that violate the treaties. But, you know, dealing with a founding member state that holds the keys to where the EU headquarters are could make things a little different than they have been in the past for other countries. But I think the biggest threat to a government like this wouldn't just be that political bickering. It would be the reaction of global markets. Capitalism is highly interconnected. If a wealthy Western European nation elected a government dedicated to taxing millionaires and limiting corporations, they would probably face some capital flight, and some corporations might pull their headquarters out of the country. Financial markets would definitely try to punish them, trying to make them into an example so that other countries don't follow suit on these measures that are negative for whoever is profiting from the status quo. So if they made it into power, their survival in government would depend entirely on whether its grassroots support was strong enough to withstand that big external economic pressure. The most realistic scenario, even in the unlikely event of them actually reaching a leading position in government, would be of some compromise. And either way, it's interesting to see how they are pulling the conversation to the left on all of these topics and potentially forcing other more moderate and ruling parties to switch up on their proposals in order to not lose all of their support to them.